Welcome to Throwing Light, episode 2. This one is called Love, comma, Your Enemy. Okay, so the heart of this episode is, what the hell does it mean to love your enemy? Why would anybody do that? Okay, and trigger warning, I'm going to be talking about President Trump. I'm not sure if I could talk about loving enemies and not bring up our current political landscape, but yeah. It's been a long day, and it's not even noon. I got sucked into a Facebook conversation that it was based off an article that Nicholas Kristof wrote for the New York Times, and the article was called, I don't know what the article is called. I didn't write it down, but it's going to be in the show notes. It's about not hating Trump's supporters, and that they are not all bigots. I felt like that was kind of perfect for this particular episode. So what I thought I'd do is try to process some thoughts about the article as I talk about what I feel, what I feel like I'm learning about what it means to love my enemy, and why I'm even interested in that. So the way this episode came about is, a couple of months ago, I had an idea to do, I don't know if it's a very good idea, but it was an idea to do a speaking tour entitled Love, comma, Your Enemies. And basically, it would be two people in a room with very opposing views, having what would hopefully be a civil conversation. It's a little bit, it would be fleshed out more than that, but that's all I've got right now. And I didn't really go anywhere with it, but I definitely wanted to do a Throwing Light episode on loving your enemy. So the way this particular podcast is going to go, this episode, is I want to break down first where the idea of loving your enemy comes from and talk a little bit about that. And then I'll shift gears and go back to the article and talk about what Kristof was saying and whether or not I think it's helpful, and regardless of my opinion, kind of throw out the other opinion as well. And then finally, I'll wrap up with some final thoughts that are not my final thoughts and not in any way actual final thoughts. Ideally, I want this show to be a conversation starter. I don't want the final word. I hope that I'm offering a first one. So let's dive in. Where did the idea of loving your enemies come from, and what does it mean for us today? Well, okay, so I'm sure that it could have dated back earlier than Jesus. If it did, I'm not aware. So we're just going to start with him. I come from the Christian tradition, so that's kind of where my wheelhouse and my knowledge comes from. But if you've listened to the first episode, for sure, you know that I don't think that's the only truth. And so I think that we have a lot to learn from Jesus. And I think he said a lot of true, important things. So that's where I'm going to start. That's what we're doing here. So this is from what could be called the New Testament. Matthew 5, 43 through 48, Matthew is one of four Gospels, and I'll talk a little bit about the Gospels in a minute. So Matthew 5, 43, 48, you have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends his rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. I don't love that list. It's like, I think there's like way too much to unpack with the idea of be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. So we're not going to talk about that. So that is one part of where Jesus says, love your neighbors. Another time that it was recorded in the Bible was Luke 6. And the whole verse couple thing is Luke 6, 26, 27 through 36. I don't know if I'm going to read all of this, but I'll read until it makes sense. To you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those you hate, who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. And then, so that was 27 through 31, and he goes on, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And it kind of goes back to what it was saying in Matthew. So there are a couple of interesting things going on here. In Matthew, the message is a bit simpler. It's challenging even for people today, but it's pretty straightforward. Love people who do you harm. Love people you hate. Love people who hate you. That's really challenging, but it's very simple. In Luke, there's a bit more to it. So this part in particular, if someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. So according to the social norms of the day, you would only use one of your hands for non-bathroom things. If someone slaps you on the cheek with their non-bathroom hand, meaning the one they don't use to wipe with, then you turn the other cheek, then they will have to use their other hand. In other words, they would have to use what usually was their left hand, the one that they wipe all their parts with, in order to slap you. By doing this, you're showing them, in a way, how degrading they're actually being. Because the thing about a slap is like you punch someone who's equal to you, you slap your inferior. So just by turning your cheek, you're showing them how degrading they're being, how insulting that is. With the other example, there's a part in the Bible that just kind of lists all the laws. It's the Hebrew Bible. It's also the Torah, so it's the Jewish Bible too. One of the laws says that you can't strip a man. And to be naked back then, the dishonor was not on the person who was naked. It was on the person who sees the person who is naked. So if someone took your coat, it would likely be because you owe them something and you have literally nothing else to pay them back with. So this is kind of an extreme thing, and they are so determined to be paid back that they are willing to take like the clothes off your back. So by giving them your shirt, you are reminding them how cruel they're being. It's like going the extra mile, almost like killing them with kindness, like not killing them, but showing them how much of an asshole they're being. So I think what Jesus is saying here is there's a bit of an edge to the idea of loving your enemy. You love them by going to such ridiculous lengths that they can see how unjust they're being. And now I want to talk about, widen the lens a little bit and talk about the Gospels. The other day, I stumbled on the work of Alexander Shaya, and I'll link his website in the show notes. But he's written a couple books, and his work centers around the four Gospels. He says that the early church would have read them in a different order than the way we read the Gospels today. So in your ordinary, in a modern Bible, we read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And we do that partly because John is so different and much longer than the other Gospels. But he argues that they would have read them, Matthew, Mark, John, and Luke. He talks about this journey. It's the human journey, essentially. At its core, it's the human experience. You might think of it as, if you know mythology or are into storytelling, it's this idea of the hero's journey. But everyone has their own journey, and it looks different for everyone. And that's, he says, that's important. we're not all supposed to be on the same journey. And that's what I mean when I say, I don't think that Christianity is the only truth. I don't think we're all supposed to be Christians. But that's not to say that Christianity isn't valid and that some of us aren't supposed to be on this path, because I feel like we are. So, small tangent, I think the fatal flaw of modern Christianity is that many Christians are passionately insistent that we are all supposed to go on the same journey. But that intuitively feels wrong for a lot of people. And that's essentially, you know, that's essentially what I just said in a different way. But so back on track, in his work, he proposes, Matthew asks, why do I have to say that word so many times now? Matthew's question is, how do I face change? Mark's question is, how do I move through suffering? John's question is, how do I receive joy? And Luke's question is, how do I mature in service? So he also talks about how each gospel correlates with, and I'm totally nerding out here, but he talks about how each gospel correlates with a specific season. So many cultures start their year, new year, in fall. So Matthew's how do I face change is fall, essentially. How do I move through suffering is winter. How do I receive joy is spring. And Luke's how do I mature in service is summer. The first passage I read was Matthew, and the second passage I read was Luke. So Matthew's question, how do I face change, just poses this invitation challenge to love your enemies. And it really doesn't go any farther than that. But by the time you get to Luke, Jesus is not just sharing this idea. He's giving an example of what it looks like in real life to love your enemies in the face of oppression. And it's creative and clever and imbued with all sorts of deeper meanings. In this particular challenge, maturing into service has some bite to it. Jesus is throwing a little bit of shade. Sometimes loving your enemies means calling out their bullshit, which I find kind of refreshing because I have a bit of an attitude sometimes. So a couple thoughts before we get back to the article. And I'm hoping I'm not going in crazy circles in writing this, the script for this particular episode. It felt really hard, and I felt like very nervous that I was going to get it wrong. Something my counselor said to me a few months ago that I keep coming back to. The majority of our counseling is couples counseling. And she made this point one day. She said the nature of relationships is that we sometimes hurt the people we love. Like, at some point or another, I have hurt and will hurt Jermaine at, Jermaine's my husband, by the way. At some point he has hurt and will hurt me. And I mean, that's not the heart of our story, but that's kind of an inescapable truth. And it felt particularly meaningful to me because I have a tendency to paint myself as a victim. So part of it, I think that's just my personality. I'm very kind of dramatic and over the top, and I have a heightened sense of justice. So I want people to treat me with a certain amount of respect. But there's this other part where I was a victim in the past, and I didn't know it. And I talked about that in the first episode. So I guess I kind of have my guard up now. But this concept has had some powerful implications for me because I think if you know Germain, then it makes a little more sense. But he, like, when you think of Germain, you don't think of someone who hurts other people. He is very loving, almost to a fault. He has, he's amazing. and I feel, most of the time, I feel like incredibly fortunate that I get to spend my life with him. But then when I hurt him, not on purpose, but just because, you know, I'm a little bit self-centered and people hurt people. That's the nature of relationships. I feel very, I feel horrible. And so the idea that I'm going to hurt him and he's going to hurt me, and overall, we're going to love each other and we're going to have to ask for forgiveness and we're going to move on and we're going to grow and we're going to hurt each other less and we're going to love each other more. Like, it just feels powerful and important. I guess what I wanted to say, this tangent, is if it's human nature to hurt even those who are closest to us, what does that say about people who we consider our enemies? And I've been thinking about the idea that there are two different kinds of enemies, probably more, but at least two that I've kind of broken it down into. The first is people, individuals who have legit hurt us. We all have those people in our life, that the ones that come to mind when we think of enemies. For me, it's people who have hurt people I love. And the second one is people we fear because we think they're very different from us. I'm taking quite a few psychology classes right now. I don't know why I said psychologically. And I'm taking a human sexuality course right now. And my professor a couple days ago said, generally people marry people who are like them. So the four big ones are race, politics, socioeconomic status or class, and religion, obviously. So we marry people like us. Usually it's at least three out of four. We just naturally kind of don't expose ourselves. Many, many people don't expose themselves to people from different religions, people from different races, people from different socioeconomic statuses, and people across political lines. When Jesus talked about loving your enemy, I think, I could be wrong, but I think he was talking about the second kind. I think he was talking about the people we fear because they're different from us. And what's interesting is that he did practice loving his enemies up to the point that they killed him. The point I want to make here is that I don't think he's advocating for being around toxic people. Loving them doesn't necessarily mean being around them, the first kind specifically. And I don't think I'm supposed to love all my enemies. I wouldn't say that I love or could love in any tangible way the person who hurt my daughter. Honestly, I wouldn't say that I could love Donald Trump in any real and tangible way, because he... aside from, I could tweet the hell out of him, but like, I'm probably never going to have any actual relationship with him. And I don't consider that a bad thing. But what I do, I see them as flawed, vulnerable people, even if they can't see themselves that way. So I think loving our enemies, I think it raises some pretty big questions. How do you love your enemies? How do you love people who have hurt you when it's hard enough to love people that you actually care about? How do societies change? Which is more powerful force for change, love or condemnation? Could be a combination of both. How do you live a life of service in the face of actual oppression? Jesus's life raises those questions and answers them at the same time sometimes. But I want to shift gears back to the article. So I'm in this Facebook group run by Ritz Vail and Ian Schumann. I hope I said those names right. They're really great people. And they have a podcast called A Little Less Wrong, and I'll link to that in the show notes. But this is where the article was first posted. This is where we had the conversation. So someone posted the article, and then a pretty respectful but charged conversation got going in the comments. I entered into it the next day, so I was a little bit late to the party, and a lot had already been said. But it was one of those conversations that sort of, have you ever been in a Facebook conversation that sort of takes over your whole day? It was that. And I've been going back to it on and off in between working on this episode. So I originally scripted this episode a few weeks ago. So this actually didn't happen today. This was a few weeks ago. And I'm talking about it. So I have had a little bit of time to process. But that actual day, it felt really raw and emotional. And I was afraid that I'd said the wrong thing. And I feel like I probably did. So I talked to my husband and the producer of this podcast a little bit about it. And he made the point that it probably doesn't feel good in the moment, those kind of conversations. But it probably is a good conversation to have. My take was along the lines of sort of what I've been talking about in this episode, though notably less biblical. I generally don't. Part of the reason why I created this podcast is because I like to break down interesting biblical passages in the right environment. But in any other environment, I really won't bring it up. And I don't know that it's appropriate. I don't think the Bible is appropriate most of the time that we try to bring it up, especially if it's on Facebook. But that's my personal opinion. I don't bring up the Bible unless I can unpack it. So essentially, I agreed with Christoph. I think that he made some really good points in the article, which were basically that, you know, not all Trump supporters are bigots. There are other reasons that they voted for Donald Trump. And just on a tactical side of things, like, let's not make enemies of people that you're trying to ultimately convert. And I can see that. The other side, which I think having had a few weeks to process, I see where they're coming from more. The woman who was arguing for that side was arguing very passionately and very articulately. She's a very wise woman of color. She's an activist. She's great. And essentially, she said, that's for you. That's for me as a white person to love white people who voted for Donald Trump. She said she's tired of being, and I'm paraphrasing, so I hope I don't misrepresent her, but she said basically she was tired of trying to be loving to privileged white people. I went home and I talked to my husband. He's a black man. And I really thought, we've had these kind of conversations a lot, and we have friends and family in our life who did vote for Donald Trump. And we had kind of come to the idea of agreeing with Christoph's article. So when I was talking to him about it, I was surprised. He ultimately said that he agreed with her, that he disagreed with a lot of the points of the article. So regardless of how nice and loving a person is, especially to people that they love, if they voted for Donald Trump, then they at the very least have their priorities skewed. They were willing to prioritize something else above whole people groups. If they did that, then they had the privilege to do that. And therein lies at least a trace of bigotry. A piece of your heart that cares more about what you want than the lives and livelihood of those who are different from you. What's coming up right now is it's really hard to talk about this. It's really hard to have. It's even hard to have this conversation by myself in my closet. My office is in a closet because it's intensely personal, because I can't not think about the people who I love who did vote for Donald Trump. But also what's coming up is that whenever we have these kinds of conversations, that's what ultimately comes up. And Christoph even used that in the article. I have family members who voted for Trump. They're not bigots, I know. Like people say that. So I get that. But I wonder if perhaps that's not a helpful argument, because your experience with your handful of family members may or may not be statistically significant. That's like my takeaway as a psychology student. But it also pretty much kind of guarantees that you'll never entertain the idea that you could be wrong. And by you, I mean me, because I've used this argument. What feels most problematic about the folks who voted for Donald Trump is that they have been seemingly silent, and I'm generalizing here, but they have been silent calling out the things that he and his administration have already done to hurt these large people groups that they don't have privilege. They are immigrants, Black people, Muslim people, people with disabilities, transgender individuals. They are people that they don't have a voice, especially not in our government right now. That's really scary. And so I could see how people coming from a perspective where they're legit being oppressed can say, this is not for me. I am not here to love these enemies. And so I guess in this podcast, I'm both agreeing and disagreeing with it. But I think that's why it falls flat to a lot of people. It circles back to the original question of that I asked at the beginning of this podcast. Why would you love your enemies? You know, what is it? Why would anybody do that? And my argument to that question, or my answer to that question, it's for the sake of change. But there's an asterisk after the word change. I don't think we're all called to love Donald Trump, and I don't think we're all called to love his supporters. First, you know, I think it depends largely on where we are in our personal life journey. If you're smack in the middle of the trials and suffering part, and particularly if you're smack in the middle of the trials and suffering part because of Donald Trump and the people that put him into office, then you're not being asked to mature into a life of service. Like, you're not being asked to love your enemies right now. And if you're just starting out on a radical shift and you're just opening your mind to new possibilities that you didn't see before, and that I think can be, you can be anywhere on the political spectrum and be in that place. If you're in a radical shift of change, that's enough for now. If you're in the trials and suffering part, that's enough for now. If your job right now is just to figure out what it means to experience joy, then that's enough right now. What that means, essentially, is that you have to kind of know where you are in the journey. And I will say life is cyclical. So, I mean, there might be an overarching, you go through each one time, but probably you go through each stage multiple times. When I think about my own life, I don't know where I am. I think I'm probably in one of the first three stages, but I know that I'm also being called to serve in certain places. So maybe in different places, in different parts of my life, but I also do feel called to love my enemies right now and to talk about what it means to love my enemies. And that also might happen to be, that might be because I am a privileged white person who I'm not afraid for my life right now. And I have that luxury not to be afraid for my life right now. So I want to use that to help other people who are afraid for their lives right now. And I think for me, that looks like not only reaching out to those people, but also reaching out to the people who I disagree with, who I vehemently disagree with, and looking to find some sort of common ground. But I think what feels difficult for me is that in that finding of common ground, I don't want to settle. And I don't want to accept racism or bigotry masked as priorities. And that's hard because I like to be liked. So even in just recording this podcast, I don't want to turn people off who may have voted for Donald Trump. But I think that not all compromises are good. And I think that Donald Trump shouldn't be president right now. And I think that people who voted for him, I don't know that I'm interested in calling them bigots. I don't think that's not ever going to be the way that I operate. But I do think that there are some hard questions that they have to answer. Even if they're people that I love deeply and dearly. And so even if that means that they might listen to this and be pissed off at me. So I guess that's a lot. That's and it kind of harkens back to that idea of Jesus's call to love our enemies with a bite, with a desire to show them the injustice that they are displaying. Yeah. So, and I wanted to say, I think one of my jobs right now in life is deferring to people who, I mean, people who ordinarily wouldn't have a voice or a platform. And I don't know exactly what that looks like yet or how to do that well, because I like the spotlight. And that's just kind of, I know that's how it was made. I was created to love that. And I think that's okay. But I also want to use that to showcase voices that desperately need to be heard. And I hope that's what I get to do in this podcast. And the last thing I wanted to say regarding like kind of all that we've been talking about, Krista Tippett on the night of the election tweeted that she was pondering a 21st century calling for those of us who could to be calmers of fear as a start. And I think she had another tweet that was similar, but I can't remember. And when I tried to go look it up, it wasn't there. But that's essentially my question for you right now. Where are you in your life right now? Do you feel called to love your enemies? Why or why not? If you do feel called to love your enemies, how can you listen and honor the people who are not called to love their enemies right now? Because I think that that goes back to everybody's on a different journey, especially if you're listening to this and you're a Christian or you feel some kind of Christianity thing. We have to be careful not to force our journey on other people, whether or not they're Christian. I think the heart of it is, some of us are called to love our enemies. Not all of us are. And the ultimate question for you is, where do you fall in that? And what's your next right step? So thank you for listening. I hope this was helpful. I hope that it started something interesting inside of you. I hope that you feel compelled to think about this more and talk about this. Yeah, if you like this episode, I'd love it if you shared it, if you think it could be helpful for other people. Here it is, your break for verses. Dear sister, I'm sorry I didn't reply to your email. I had this whole horrible speech written out addressing all of your many, many very personal points. I saved it to my drafts folder and I wanted to hit send, but in the end, I couldn't. I didn't want to hurt you, which feels ironic. But I also knew that it wouldn't help. I know that my actual reply wasn't actually helpful. Let's focus on loving each other. What the fuck does that mean? It's not that I don't love you. It's that I don't know how to. What does authentic love look like under these circumstances? I don't have the answer, and I don't want to be in this petty fight. I mean, it's not like you hurt me, but you did. And I don't know what reconciliation looks like here. Even if I forgive you, even if I physically remove all of the anger and sadness, even if we make it through a dozen peaceful Thanksgiving dinners, it wouldn't help. Because, let's be honest, it's not just my politics that offends you. Though it does make a handy excuse.